about the justice that was applied by early Muslims.
Yeah.
So would you agree that Umar applied justice, him being your second caliph?
Yes.
Okay. You also talked earlier about the court system in this country, and you think that it's becoming more and more just because they don't discriminate.
I think it's yeah, okay.
I mean, like, you can, for example, a Christian or Muslim can go in court and they will not discriminate what religion believes.
Right. I agree with that. Well, essentially, I think that that's what they're trying to achieve.
Okay. Right. So you would agree that to favour someone because of him being a Muslim or a Christian is wrong, that is not justice?
It depends. Well, I'll tell you what I mean. I'll explain exactly what I mean. Okay? No, I didn't. If you listen to my talk and you're here for the whole of my talk, I said quite clearly, okay, that the aims and the objectives of the Islamic system is different. The ultimate injustice and the true injustice, what injustice means is to put something in its wrong place. So if you start saying that God became a man and got stuck on a cross and died, and God had a son, you have put something very much in its wrong place. You have committed a most atrocious crime and a blasphemy against God. Okay? So therefore, in the viewpoint of Islam, what Islam teaches about what is justice and what is not justice, okay? The injustice of leading, and that ultimately is going to take people to where? To hellfire. So if, for example, if I know in this country, in this society, if I know, for example, that there is a factory that is spewing out poisonous fumes that is killing people and is going to make their babies mutilated in the most horrific and torturous way, but I just keep on ignoring it and I don't do something about it, we all agree that that's not a just government. So, no, you can't. Just let me finish, okay? So, well, if you don't want to have patience to listen to my answer, there's the door over there. You're quite welcome to leave, okay? If you don't want to hear the answer to the question, don't ask the question in the first place. It's my prerogative to take as long as I feel I need to answer the question properly. Well, you can go home. Goodbye. It's nice to talk to you, okay? And obviously, the fact is that I don't think you're even listening to my answer, so I don't see what's the point in responding to your question since you don't want to listen to my answer. So could you actually tell me what I've said so far?
Well, my question was,
could you tell me what I've responded to your question, please? I just want to be sure that you're listening to what I'm saying and I'm not just wasting my breath.
Well, you moved away from my question.
Okay, so I think, excuse me, bro, if we could move on to someone else's question.
I don't see exactly how different. I mean, take this Islamic law.
Right.
I mean, something that you would see as fundamentally wrong, and not just the small nuances, but something that would be wrong to other people that our law sees as right. I mean, I think they're quite similar. It makes sense that they're much more different.
What is different is the underlying philosophy. What is really fundamentally different is what underlies everything. That's what's different. Yes, we all agree that lying is bad, that killing is bad, that stealing is bad. I mean, every society is going to agree on some very core things that everyone is going to agree about, without a doubt. Okay? I mean, what is going to differ, for example, is, well, how do we deal with that? That is different. Now, and also it's the priorities. For example, we know from the Cold War, from the time of communism, that communism as an ideology had a whole different set of principles than we do in the West. The Western perception of human rights, for example, is largely based upon individualism, individuality, the right of the individual, which is fair. We all recognize the individual has rights. But the West, generally, as a philosophy, gives the right of the individual almost it is really the paramount. That's at the top. Individual, that is the supreme right. Whereas communism treats as the greatest crime is a crime against society, crime against the state. Okay? Now, of course, in the in the West when the communists were saying, oh, look at their human rights violations and this and that, whatever. But the fact is, they had a very different idea of what human rights were. Now, who's right and who's wrong? Why is the Western idea of human rights right, and the Chinese communist idea or the Russian idea or whoever idea is the wrong one? Who decides what's right and what's wrong? Well, we decide because we're the big guys and we're in charge and we've got the most power and the most authority, so our concept of human rights happens to dominate at the moment.
It comes back to what you said. I mean, there's not necessarily a right way. There's many
ways
to implement it badly.
I think the point is this. It's a very, very interesting subject. It's a deep subject. But this is the point, okay? Everyone, I think, most people recognize that you have to draw some balance between the rights of the individual and the rights of society. No society allows an individual to be absolutely free to do whatever they like. You can't just go and kill anyone and say, well, you know, I felt like doing it. It made me feel good. Right? Okay, but we're laughing. But okay, let's take another scenario. Oh, there's a nice girl over there. I want to have sex with her. I'm married, right? And I've got kids, right? She's a nice bit older, right? Come on, let's go and have a look. Come on, whatever, right? Now, I'm not killing anyone. I'm just having a bit of harmless sex, a bit of fun. But it's not harmless at all. It's not harmless to my wife. It's not harmless to my kids. It's not harmless at all. In fact, more people may end up dying from me having sex with another person when I'm married, and more people may end up dying ultimately than if I just went and shot someone. Because it may mess up my kids, it may do this, it may do that, and as a consequence they will behave like that. Everything has consequences. But we human beings think, oh, you know, a bit of sex, bit of thing, well, what's this? So she gets upset, tough. Right? But if I shoot someone, bang, that's bad. It's all very black and white, but it's not black and white. That's the fact is, this human society is not like that. It's not black and white. Our actions and what their consequences are, we have very little understanding of them because the complexities of it are so enormous. And that's philosophically why Islam says the only one who has the right to determine what is the balance between individual freedom and social responsibility, the only one who knows that is God. I mean, ultimately, the question is going to be, well, how do I know your religion's from God? And that's just a matter of conviction, you know? That's, I believe it, and I believe it because of A, B, C, D, E, F, G, right? And for me, that's stronger personally than whatever reasons the West wants to offer me that their system is the best system. But this is the problem. Do you understand what I'm saying? So, but from our point of view, God understands that. So, for example, why are adulterers and adulteresses stoned to death? Well, for the very reason that adultery causes such destruction to society. The family is the bedrock of society. Things that undermine the family, undermine society, and the ultimate result of it, maybe not immediately, you don't even see it, maybe not even in a generation, but after two or three generations, the chaos that could ensue from that is ultimately much more. So harmful. So there's a very strict punishment. Why? Because that has to be maintained for the well-being of humanity. But that's not something we might ever figure out with our brain. Do you understand? So these are the type of things that does make the emphasis, for example, in the Islamic law is so different than, for example, it is in the Western law. Islamic law, you find, is really a balance between giving the individual freedom, which it recognizes the individual needs freedom, but also we have to be responsible members of society. In here, in the West, we're always struggling to find a balance between those things, and we can never seem to get it. We're always going this way, and it's the same thing with women's rights. It's the same when I started about Rodney King. We forget that in the 1916s, Martin Luther King, right, and Malcolm X were protesting about what? Lynching of black people. Black people were still being lynched in the United States of America in the 1960s. They had segregated buses, segregated schools in the south of the United States of America. Segregation. From George Bush's thing, he was probably alive when all that stuff was still going on. That's America in the 1960s. That is not a long time ago. So these are sort of now. You know, I'm not saying you can move from one extreme to the other when it comes to racism, but there may be other things like women's rights. Okay? Women, of course, need rights. But women happen to be biologically those section of society that biologically and mentally are equipped the best to bring up the children and to nurture them and the care for them. And it's something that even if you believe in evolution, you've got to admit that, right? But if you have a whole society whose drive and whose aim is economy, money, get everyone out working, get the women out there, we need more money. If you have more money, then that what happens ultimately? You get a disintegration of the family, you get a disintegration of the home, etc., etc. You have consequences. Islam does, in my belief, draw the perfect balance. If it's implemented properly, it draws the balance. Why? Because it's from God, who knows the needs of the human beings. God knows the balance that we don't know. Do you understand? So it is philosophically different, and practically, ultimately, yes, it is different. It is very different.
You mentioned earlier that the fundamentalists sort of big problems with westernization of the Islamic countries. So you think that this is sort of an inherent human nature rather than sort of westernization? Because you yourself mentioned earlier in your speech that mobility was looked on very highly.
That's a very good point. I agree with you 100%. It's not the fault of the West, it's the fault of the Muslims. I'm not blaming the West, I'm just trying to expound on what I think are the motivations behind it. But on the other hand, I'm the last person who says it's the West's fault. Not at all. Okay, in fact, I said in my talk also that the Muslims need to think about themselves and think about their societies. And one of the things that I personally believe is the reasons why Muslims are weak and why the West is strong is because Muslims do not establish justice. They do not have justice, by and large. Their societies are corrupt. They're full of injustices. They don't have equity. They don't put things in their right place. And it's made even worse, as the Quran says, who is worse than the one who knows the truth and doesn't follow it? It's even worse when you know that here is God's revelation and here is the way, the perfect way of life, but you throw it behind your back and you follow something else. Then you're worse than a person who doesn't even know. So therefore the punishment that's going to come to you is going to be worse. So no, I would agree. I think Muslims are the ones to blame. But on the other hand, people are going to be thinking, what is going on, right? Why do we want to fight with this and that and whatever? And I think that that's all I'm trying to point out. Rather than blaming the West, I'm just saying, so this is their motivations, this is what they're doing, these are the things that are driving them. But if the Muslims were following their religion, it wouldn't really affect them very much at all. That's a good question. But that shows the difference between a true religion and a false religion. That's one argument I will say. I could use this as a type of argument to show that Christianity was not the true religion. If it was true, it would have had the beneficial effect. Okay. So and therefore I would also say that yes, because you see, it's very interesting when we examine, if we really now examine this historically, and this is something I wanted to sort of knit it in, but I didn't get around to it. Look at so many of the things we take for granted that we consider great things. I consider great things about living in the West. Why I still enjoy living in the West, right? For example, I could be the son of a dustman and I could become the director of a major company. I could become an MP, I could perhaps even become the Prime Minister. Not that I want to, but, you know, I could, right? So the idea that you could be born in this part of society, well, look at John Major. His mother was on benefits. He was born in Brixton, went to a comprehensive, his mother was on benefits, and he became Prime Minister. We all take that for granted. If we want to, we can do that. It's just normal for us. But that didn't exist in the West. It didn't exist. Okay? In the time of feudalism, you were a serf, you were a trader, you were a nobleman, you were the clergy. The only way maybe you could move around a bit is by joining the clergy. Where did they get this idea that you could move from any part of society to the other? Look, historically, the only civilization that had a concept like that at the time was the Muslim civilization. If you again look at the idea of science, Christianity has long had a big conflict between science, between the scientific knowledge and the religious knowledge, because Adam and Eve ate from the tree of knowledge, right? So it's almost as if knowledge was something dangerous. Okay? Islam never had a problem with that. So what we find is, bit by bit, if we start examining it, you know, animal rights. I was just reading today about some of the animal rights, some of the verdicts that Muslim jurists came out about rights for animals. Okay, women's rights of inheritance for women, of women participating in various, you know, aspects of society, religious tolerance, and so on and so forth. These were things that we take for granted here in the West, but they were really lights that were taken from the Muslim civilization. Okay, so I know it sounds a bit whatever, but even those things that are really so great about the West, they're things that were inherent and implicit anyway in the Muslim civilization. It's not something that's really a product of the West itself. It's really something, or many aspects of it are something that they borrowed from the civilization of Islam.
Yeah.
So, you know, obviously, you know, we would argue that, I would argue that, yes, the West has many beneficial aspects, but it has many weaknesses, it has many deficiencies. Yes, it has a very rosy image on the outside, but you don't need to dig very deep. You just need to go to America. And you need to really see what America is like behind the movie screen, okay? You'll find there's a lot of poverty. There's a lot of crime, there's a lot of behind the shiny surface, it's not so nice. Okay? And the strange thing is, if you go to the Muslim lands, it's almost the opposite. Yes, it's grotty, it's thin, it's corrupt, but if you go behind the surface, you'll find that it's very stable. The family's still important, how the people are, how they behave, etc., etc. You understand? It's almost as if the West is showing a nice outside, but when you look inside, it's not so nice. And yes, the Muslim world shows a pretty unpleasant outside, but when you go down and you meet the ordinary people and you see what's going on, it's really not as bad as it looks. You know, so appearances can be deceptive. That's another thing one has to think about. It's not a proof in and of itself anyway, it's just something, like I said, to think about.
Before that, to carry Islamic law, we need the kind of people who can have the quality to carry out the law.
Yes.
As you said before.
That's very true.
Can you explain what kind of people that can carry the law, and can Muslims in our time do that? Let's say we have a Islamic country carry out Islamic law. Can we really do that?
Allah, I don't know. If you're honestly asking me now, today, no, I don't think so. I don't think the Muslims exist. I don't think there are the people who have the quality and the caliber to do it. If I look at the Muslims today, even if we just look at the, if we look at the Muslim groups, okay, if the Muslim groups, the Ikhwan al-Muslimin, the Hizb al-Tahrir, the Salafiyun, the whoever they may be, right? If these people represent, right, the forefront of calling back to Islam, then I have to say that we're in a pretty hopeless situation. Look how they treat each other. Look how they talk about each other. They can't even be just with each other. How are they going to be just with a Jew or a Christian? You know, we can't even establish the simple etiquettes and manners of brotherhood. Okay, we can't be just with each other. How are we going to be just outside of that? So, this is what I really think. We're racked by partisanship, tribalism. It's a different type of tribalism. It's not like I belong to, you know, the Quraysh, and I belong to, you know, whatever it is, Bani Umayyah, or I belong to this and that. No, now I belong to this group, and I belong to this group, and I belong to this group. And we fight for our group, and we call for our group, and we love for our group, and we hate those people. Maybe not an absolute hate, but we oppose those people who are not with our group. It's not an issue. And the fact is that someone may do something in our group, and we ignore it, and someone in the other group is doing the same thing. We say, look at that person, you see what he's doing? That's really disgusting. That's just tribalism. That's pure tribalism. Well, we call it hisbiya, not asabiya. It's the same thing though. So I don't see really how these people, if these are at the forefront, well, how about the other people then? So to tell you the truth, you know, this is why all this stuff, Islamic State, Khilafah, Khilafah, Islamic State, we want to establish Islam. It's just like a lot of wind. You know, you can say that till you're blue in the face. Allah is never going to support people who don't have the qualities. If we don't have those qualities, the qualities of justice, first, and justice is, when I was looking at this, I was going through the verses of the Quran talking about justice, the examples of Umar. Who's going to be like Umar? Who's going to be like that? Who gets upset with someone and then goes and says, oh, you whip me like I whip you. Who's going to be like that? Where are the people who are like that? You know, even from amongst the Muslim Islamic groups, where are the people like that? So those are the things, that make you realize that, you know, well, alhamdulillah, we worship Allah, we pray to Allah, we do these type of things. Well, that's good. Okay, alhamdulillah, we don't make shirk. That's good. You know? Those are good qualities too. But the sort of excellent qualities, okay, that Allah says, we will establish these people in authority in the land, who believe in Allah, and they perform the zakah, and they give the zakah, and they enjoin justice, and they forbid wrong. Okay? So those are the sort of people that are worthy of carrying that banner. Where these people are, who they are they, you know, I'm sure they must be somewhere hiding, probably. They're probably hiding because everyone else is saying you're not of this and that, and you're not such and such, and you whatever. And so the guy's probably sitting real quiet, because the moment he pokes his head out, some Muslim group's going to shoot it down. And I don't mean literally shoot it, although that might even happen as well. So, you know, a person asked me, I was giving a class in an adult education center, and a person asked me a question. He said, which Muslim country are you really proud of? I said, I'm not proud of any Muslim country. In fact, I can only think of a few Muslims that I'm actually proud of. A few actually Muslim individuals that I'm proud of, let alone a whole country. So the fact is, I'm not trying to be pessimistic, you know. It doesn't really take a lot. I mean, it does take a lot to change. It doesn't need to take a long time to change. But it does need to take a lot of, you know, a lot of effort in yourself. That's what does need to take. People need to change themselves. They need to change their attitudes. They need to change their manner. If they do that, it can happen. But until that happens, no. I don't think we're going to see, you know, that change that we hope for. That's my opinion, Allahu A'lam. It will come sometime, but when? Allah knows best. And with who? Allah knows best.
You still going to take Nigeria by preserving Sharia? So, I want to ask you, like, about that model, like, there are some obvious deficiencies.
Yep.
And the methodology of Islamic law and the whole ijtihad.
I think that, I don't know enough about Algeria, but the little I know about Afghanistan...
Nigeria.
Yeah, I know. No, I did. What did I say?
Algeria.
Yeah, no, that was a slip of the tongue. I don't know much about Nigeria. Okay, I don't know much about Nigeria. But I know a little bit more about Afghanistan under the Taliban. Now, there is no doubt that the Taliban tried very earnestly to implement Islamic law. There's no doubt about that. Okay? And there's no doubt as well that what the Taliban did, although it was certainly not perfect by any means, it was a whole lot better than whatever was there before. That's a fact, too. But what? How did these people behave? Now, if you know the history of the Taliban, these were orphans. A lot of them were orphans, refugees, who went to Pakistan and were brought up in these madrasas. Now, any of you guys who went to a madrasa, right, old traditional madrasa with mullana, so bang, like that, right? Can you imagine that that's where you spend all of your time? Maybe you don't have a mother or a sister. Maybe you don't even see a woman. So you don't know what it's like that your mother hugs you and to feel, you don't even know that. So you're brought up and this is all you, that's what you get. You got it wrong, you didn't memorize that, you said it wrong, right? Imagine you're being brought up like that. You can learn the surahs, you can learn that this law is this and this and you should grow your beard and cover yourself and this and that. But where's the mercy? And where's the compassion? And where's the justice? And where's all of those things that the Quran teaches? You have to nurture those things in people. So you let these guys go. They may know the book from beginning to end. They may know the hadith. They may know the sharia, which they didn't know that much. But even if they did, but if they don't have those qualities, and they're harsh and they're tough, and they don't understand about what justice is, and they don't understand about those other qualities you need, what are you going to get? You're going to get oppression. Like I said, I can't think. I could, you know, it's probably the worst thing you could think of. People getting hold of Islamic law, right? And just using it in an unjust way. You know? So, you know, you execute person for apostasy, but the apostasy is anyone who says they don't like Saddam Hussein, that's apostasy. Okay, boom, kill him. I don't know, whatever, right? Okay, a person is starving and they have to steal some bread, chop his hand off. That's not Islam, that's not Islamic law. Do you understand? Okay, punish the poor people, leave the rich people. You know, punish the people who are not part of the ruling party, leave the people who are the ruling party. It's going to be horrific. So it's, you understand, it's a complete picture. You have to have those. Now, Nigeria, I don't know enough. I don't know enough about the people. I don't know enough about how they are. You know, I don't know enough about it to make any comment about them at all. So I can't really comment whether they're doing it right or not.
I was talking about this case that happened, like they were executing a woman because, like,
but that's the punishment in Islam.
But I was asking about the role ijtihad plays, like Sharia, like, it's not in other rules which are defined.
Bro, I don't. Yeah, I'm not an expert in Sharia. I don't know enough about the Sharia, and I said that in the beginning, to be able to talk in depth about those type of things. So I don't know. Those are things that when I find out, I say, okay, what's going on here? Can I go and ask someone to explain to me? Is this right? Because I don't know. So those things I don't have any idea, and I don't want to talk about something that I just don't know about. So I mean, I know about it generally, but specifically about those type of things, I just don't know. Because I got lots of questions myself, you know. So Allahu Alim. And that's another problem, you know. People say Sheikh Abdul Rahim, right? I say, brother, please, you know, I am not a sheikh anything. Maybe a milk sheikh, right? Okay, okay. You know, but. You know, I mean, honestly, like they say, you know, in the land of the blind, the one-eyed man is king, right? If I'm the person people think is a sheikh, wallah, we're in a desperate situation. You know, if they think I'm a sheikh, we're desperate. And we are, honestly, we are. We have so little knowledge about our religion. And obviously, again, to implement an Islamic state, you have to have quite a lot of knowledge. Who are our judges going to be? Okay, guys, we want an Islamic state tomorrow. Yeah, khilafah. Right, who's the judge? Oh, I'll be the judge. Right, what should we do? Can't even pronounce Surah Fatiha properly, right? And he's going to be a judge. I mean, it's terrifying. You know? So this is the problem, because, you know, we don't even have the framework. So, I mean, certainly not here. I mean, maybe in some countries they do. In Egypt, people still go to Al-Azhar and they study Sharia. They do that. Alhamdulillah, and in Nigeria and other places as well. But it's not all that simple, you know. And that's the fact. Yeah. Yes.
Man can a judge can,
yeah.
is not perfect because it's he's a man.
Yep.
Okay. Even if a law is perfect, but if one is, I mean, if the system of death penalty, okay, for individuals it can be just, but for the whole system, a judge can or a jury can do, can make mistakes. But if the guy is executed, then what's the solution? I mean, is it? Do we take the risk? Of
but,
making
okay.
mistakes or not.
What are the things for which there is a death penalty in Islam?
Not too much.
Yeah, exactly. So, and also the Sharia is very very strict guards. I don't know enough about the details of it, but I know that the guards are very strong before a person could be executed. So I mean, I didn't study the Sharia very in depth, okay, and all the conditions and stuff. But you have to be really really certain. Okay, you have to be really, really certain before someone is put to death. That's for sure. You know, it has to be very conclusive evidence for a death penalty. And I think there's only like three or four things for which there is a death penalty. So, you know, and it has to be, you know, conclusive evidence. It can't be just something that is circumstantial or whatever. Or, you know, I mean, I don't know. I don't know enough about the details of it, so I shouldn't even speak about it at all. So I don't really know. But the ultimate, you know, at the end of the day, we say we believe in Allah and we're judged by what God has revealed, because we believe that's His wisdom. He knows the weaknesses of the human beings and He knows the strengths of the human beings. So He knows that everyone has to die. I mean, I suppose this all comes back to the Islamic, you know, the whole perception of what life is about. You understand? So, I suppose in the sense that, you know, if you live in a, if your outlook is purely materialistic and you say, well, this is the only life I've got and I'm going to die, I'm in the grave and that's it, and you know, the worms eat me, and it's going to be a little bit different from a person who believes that, you know, there's a day of judgment and a hellfire and a paradise. The viewpoint, the whole way of looking at the world is going to be something a little bit different. You know, that doesn't mean that human life is not important and sacred. It clearly is, you know, but this all goes back to those fundamental things and those foundational ideas that we're talking about. Yeah. I'm sorry, I'm not. It would have been good to have someone who really knows about the Sharia. That's my, you know, I only. That's the limit of my knowledge. I don't know the details of the Islamic law. It would be very nice. I would love myself to hear someone who could talk about the Sharia in detail to explain how about this and that, but it's not in my capability.
As somebody's trying to learn more about the relationship between Islam and the West,
right.
How much problems do you think lie in the fact that a lot of the people, they can't really like walk a mile in the other person's shoes? They just can't get inside each other's heads, so they don't try. Is there any problem stem from that, perhaps?
I think, you know, a lot of these things do come from misunderstandings, not knowing about each other, not being able to appreciate other people's points of view. Yeah, and that's true. There is that sort of problem, and that problem does exist. I think the thing is that, you know, really, if you go and you meet Muslims, and you'll find they're not inherently hostile, aggressive people, and they're also not inherently judgmental people as well. That's not something really inherent in Muslims. But I mean, you know, what is the? I mean, on one hand, you could feel a bit optimistic that there is this coming together, that people are beginning to understand more about each other, and there's a very positive side, you know, that's taking place in the world at the moment. And I think a lot of Muslims are beginning to think again about what is our attitude towards the rest of the world, because there was certainly a whole time in Muslim history when it was like there's us and there's them. You know, there's the believers and there's the disbelievers, right? The people on the truth and the people on the falsehood, and they're oppressing mankind and we're liberating mankind. And I mean, certainly for a time that was really true, okay? But I mean, now the world seems to be a very different place, okay? Or it may for one brief moment have been like that. I've got a suspicion that, unfortunately, or fortunately, I don't know whether it's good or bad. You know, whatever God wills, I suppose. But it looks like everything has been pushed back right back to the way it was. And I think some people want it to be like that, from both sides. Some people like it black and white, you know? That's the way we want to keep it. There's the bad guys, we're the good guys, let's just keep it like that. None of this, you know, let's get together and feel right and talk to each other and stuff like that. Oof. You know? No more wars, no more weapons, no more... So I don't know. I mean, it depends where it's... You know, I feel the world, the whole world is on some sort of brink at the moment. You know, certainly I was talking with a friend of mine and I was saying to him, you know, he's quite knowledgeable, and we were discussing exactly this sort of issue. I said, you know this definition that many of the scholars, you know, the Muslim scholars, they talked about the world as Dar al-Islam and Dar al-Harb, which means the place of Islam and the place of war. Any place that wasn't the place of Islam was the place of war. I said, is that still true today? I said, well, you know, Allahu A'lam, Allah knows, can we really think of the world in that sort of sense anymore? I mean, even scholars hundreds of years ago started thinking of a different type of category called Dar al-Imana, a place of trust, where Muslims live in that land underneath a tap of trust. Okay? But, you know, it's a very, very big subject, and it goes back to examining the whole nature of what is jihad, what is warfare in Islam. I think you might have had some talk about that already, right? And it goes back to thinking about all of that. And really, a Muslim wants to do what is pleasing to God. That's what's important to us. Okay? But we know from the Quran, God does not love the aggressor. He doesn't love the transgressor. Yes, God says, fight the disbelievers, right? Fight them. Okay? But don't transgress the limits. Don't go over the bounds. Because God doesn't love the transgressors. God does not love the aggressors, it says as well. Islam is not supposed to be aggressive. Okay, so if we live in a world now where people are saying, okay, we want to hear about your religion, they actually say, come and tell us what Islam is about. And before, in the time of the Prophet, it was like, you're not coming anywhere near us. You come into our land, we fight you, we kill you. So the Muslims have a right to fight under those circumstances. But how about a world where people say, you come and we want to hear about your religion. You're free, we'll put you on, so we'll even make some programs and put them on TV. I mean, are we saying, you know, how do we deal with that? So we have to start thinking again, you know. But if the world is going to stay like that, that's the real question. I don't really know if it's going to stay like that. It's like some people don't want it to be like that. They want it to be all black and white and, you know, let's draw the line again. It's much easier that way. So Allahu A'lam, you know, God knows best. We could talk about these things for a long, long, long time.
And I would like to give my highest appreciation and zakat to the brother and also the audience who come to this. So if you have, especially the non-Muslims, if you have any more you know, questions or queries about Islam, then you are welcome to ask us and, you know, come round to the prayer room or, you know, wherever. A lot of us here, you know, some brothers really obviously have knowledge. The prayer room is in 9 Princess Garden. It's near the nursery, so opposite the health center. It's there, and you can also email us at islam@ic.ac.uk or bureau.ac.uk. So. Inshallah, I think to finish.